Our guest today, John McEwen, the String Wizard, original founding member of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. We're going to talk to John about the year 2020, some special projects that he has that will be arriving in 2021. We're also going to talk to John about what he believes 2021 will show for all this disastrous COVID as far as it impacting the music business. John's a frequent guest on Unreal Bluegrass. I can't think of a better way to end 2020 than sitting back and reflecting with John McEwen. First, you're going to hear Brooklyn Crossing from John. That'll get us right into the discussion. He's going to talk about a few projects. He's given Unreal Bluegrass some unreleased samples of an audio book. You'll hear that after this. The newsman will follow our conversation with John McEwen, the String Wizard. You're listening to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm really happy to have back to Unreal Bluegrass a frequent contributor, I will say, to Unreal Bluegrass, the one and only John McEwen, the String Wizard. How are you, John?
Thank you for calling me for a therapy session.
Well, me too. I think at this point I probably get as much out of this as you on the other end, because it's been one of those years. It's been 2020, and here we are coming on the end of it. But, you know, so I think we all need some sort of therapy.
If anybody has ever said, I'm working on a project, but I haven't had time to get to it because I've been on the road, they're not using that excuse this year.
Boy, that's true. The road has gotten very small, and we're all staying home. John, and I know from the last time we were talking, earlier this year, I think, you were working on some things to be, and I assume project dates have moved. They have for me, not for projects, for things that I do in my business. I know you were working on an album. I think it was supposed to come out in the spring.
Well, I kind of have four, five, maybe six, if the sixth one goes, different things that are going to hopefully be ready, or one is ready, one is almost ready, and three others are, all I got to do is find a home for them. But one is the. You familiar with the Mountain Whippoorwill?
Yes.
Poem?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yes. Yes.
I've done that for years, and I have an illustrated children's book of that coming out.
That's what I remember that you were going to have coming out, because I have a recording of a version that you did on the last John McEwen album. I think, don't you do a song version of that, and then you made it into a book?
On Made in Brooklyn.
Made in Brooklyn. That's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I had one person in the audience, Jay Unger, the fiddle player. He sat there and listened to me deliver this. He was he played on the album, and this was the last thing. And it's on the Made in Brooklyn album.
Yeah, it's on the Chesky album, Chesky label, which has a lot of neat sound qualities, and you took advantage of a lot of those in some of those songs that were recorded in essence live. We talked about that at length before, but it kind of gives a bigger dimension to what you're doing. I remember that song well.
Yeah, that Made in Brooklyn album is I think the best sounding record I've ever been part of. And I called up my friend Bob Edwards. He's an engineer at Skywalker Ranch. Bob Edwards engineered things and produced things with the Dirt Band in the 70s, late 70s. And then he got a job at Skywalker, you know, the George Lucas place.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Bob, I'm making a record for a company called Chesky Records. You ever heard of it? He goes, John, Chesky Records. I use Chesky Records to set up my, when the studio's ready to go and I have to mix, I put on some of their stuff to make sure it's sounding good. Because, he said, how did you get that deal? I said, well, Norman Chesky came to see me. Anyway, he said, there's only two things you need to say to Mr. Chesky. I said, what's that, Bob? He said, thank you, sir, and thank you. Yes, sir, and thank you, sir.
And one other thing, where and when?
Oh, yeah.
It's a great album. We've gone over it before, and I play cuts for it often, on Unreal Bluegrass, and it's just a great mix of different types of music that have influenced you from different parts of the country that you pull into the music that you do. I think everybody in the audience by now knows that John McEwen, founding member of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, your musical legacy is firmly entrenched in the spirit and soul of America. in my opinion. I know. Huh? What?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a wonderful book that we've gone in at length in before on this program, which is one of the better biographies I've ever read of that type of a musician on the road. There's so many great little stories. Yeah, The Life I Picked, a perfect title, too. One of my favorite books.
It took me a month to get to that title. I had 50 ideas on two or three pages, and the night before I turned in the final manuscript, I said, I've got to get a title for this thing. Honey, I'll be upstairs maybe in the morning. But I went downstairs, and I sat in front of the computer, and I went, I've got to figure out a way, something to call this book about the life I pick. Oh, that's it.
You could have been bold like the Beatles and just give a white cover to it, and nobody would know.
Yeah. It's a great
book. It's funny, John. I told you this when it came out, and you sent me a copy so we could talk about it on the air. It's well written. You tell a good story. A couple things about John. Number one, the history of the music. But if you see John live, he's a great storyteller. And I think I've seen you several times live, and I think that applies well to your writing also. You write good stories, and you tell the tales that you've lived in a very fascinating and interesting way, and I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I had so many post-it notes in it when we talked for my favorite pieces of it that I almost put one on every page, but it's just a wonderful book. I mean, it's just really entertaining, and it's like I'm talking to you and I hear your voice telling these stories. You're good at telling stories, John.
Well, I appreciate that. One of the nicest reviews or comments I get are people saying, I felt like you're sitting across the table in my kitchen telling me these stories. And, well, that's perfect. That's just what I want.
That's a good description. You've never been in my kitchen before, but had you been, I would have felt like this is what it's like reading John's book.
And that's leading up to another project.
Yes, sir.
There's an audio version of that book. I'm going to read it and put it out there and see what happens.
Oh, that'll be great.
We'll actually be able to do that. That'll be fun.
Have you ever done an audio book before?
No, it's going to be a fun thing. I haven't ever done an adult children's illustrated book either. Ah, a new thing.
Yeah,
starting a book on the Circle album, 50 years. Can you believe that, Steve?
I can't. I can't, yeah. And John, I would be remiss to not mention the passing of your brother Bill whenever I think of that album and some of the things you did then, and very sorry, haven't talked to you since that, but very sorry to hear about that, your brother.
I appreciate it. Bill was Bill McEwen, William E. McEwen Presents, as he put his name on the album, on many albums. He was quite a guy. He produced movies, The Jerk. He produced 5 Steve Martin movies. He produced Pee Wee's Big Adventure. He produced The Big Picture, which was a very funny movie. He produced records. He produced the Dirt Band records in the 70s. Will the Circle Be Unbroken album. I mean, I kind of came up with I asked Earl if he'd play with us one night in Colorado. And the next week I asked Doc if he'd play with us. And they both said yes. And I called Bill and he said, I'm going to see if I can get Merle Travis. And 4 weeks later, after some people had been called in, like Maybelle Carter and Doc Watson and Vassar Clements, we told the Dirt Band what we were going to do. And 8 weeks after I asked Doc that question, we were rehearsing and starting to record in Nashville in August. And, for those days.
What a great event. And it's hard to believe 50 years, but what a great event. And I used the mention of that to offer my condolences for your brother. I don't want to take away from that recording event alone. It was just a remarkable, I mean, it just kind of stunned everybody. And this is the one thing that I remember a sticker being on the outside of that album when it came out. And it said to the effect, if you own but one country album, this is what you get. I don't know who put it on there, but it was on the outside of the cellophane wrap, but I still think that's true. If I know a friend who who's never listened to bluegrass or country has no idea. I would still say the circle be unbroken. Start there.
Meet the people. I bring it up because my brother called it his masterpiece, and if I hadn't had him, because he was running the management side of the Dirt Band and producing records, if I had made that album by myself, it wouldn't have had the good singing it has on it. It wouldn't have had some of the people. It wouldn't have been edited together so well.
Fantastic.
And it would have been a picture of me and Earl and Doc in front of a bus somewhere, you know?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the album art, it's like a Civil War, and the songs don't go back that far. They might, some of them might, but the album cover, you really have to read all the little words around it to pick up all the names on it. In the original album cover that I have, it's not immediately identifiable as full of the greatest country stars and bluegrass stars at the time that existed. I mean, yeah, once you listen to it, you think, I need to have this.
I remastered it for LP, meaning vinyl record, mm-hmm. and for CD. And you know, you saw the Ken Burns documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Well, episode 6 was called "Will the Circle Be Unbroken?" And I kind of closed that out with the last 20 minutes talking about sessions. And ever since then, for 14 months, the Circle album has been in the top 5 on 3 different Amazon charts, and folk, bluegrass, and special interests.
That's incredible. Yeah, you pretty much dominated that episode, and it was you talking about that album. And you're right; it's never gonna, it's always gonna be there somewhere.
It has not sold anywhere near what Old Brother did, and it had a movie. But people have it, if they have an old one, I highly recommend you get the remastered CD. But it has extra cuts and liner notes and stuff. And if you have that, then get one for your friends.
It's the giving season. It's the giving season,
yeah.
John. Yeah.
And that would be a nice thing. Spread the love. And anyway.
I want to touch on that album one more time before we may come back to it by accident. But intentionally, I want to speak about the recording process and the sound and the live quality. It is like you hear all these discussions. There are so many great tracks on that album of just listening to the discussions of those, of Doc and Jimmy Martin and all those people that are sort of, sort of getting ready to and get around the microphone and record something. I love those type of albums that have that quality of, it's a studio recording, but it's really recorded as someone live on stage. And I'm so glad that decision was made to keep everything rolling to capture all that.
Yeah, it gets about 1 out of every 20 reviews on the Circle album on Amazon will say, I don't like this talking so much, but the music's good, you know. But I want to meet that person and say, you don't get it. The talking is more important than the music.
Maybe they don't know who the people talking are. I mean, that could be. Maybe they don't instantly recognize those voices anymore. I mean, we're getting older, John, but to me, those are like, that's what I want to hear. It's like you talk about John McEwen sitting at your table and reading a book to you. When I listen to that album, it's like I hear those people right in front of me, this kind of, when Mother Maybelle's trying to decide how she wants to play, what should she play on a guitar, should she play on an auto harp, that conversation to me is, the music's fantastic, but those conversation bits are just... Those make it something you want to hold on to forever.
My brother ran a tape of 3 3/4 the whole time, so in order to pick up what's between songs, and that was creeping along as we were recording at 30 inches per second. And you talk about recording process. Many people listening might know that it was all recorded live to 2-track, which means that when you finish the song, you had just made your master. You weren't going to mix it. You're going to take that live to 2-track, and master from it. And that's one reason the album sounded so much better than if it had been multi-track and then mixed down. And it was just better.
Yeah. It's never gonna drop down on that level of masterpiece. And if you need, it's still, if someone doesn't have any country music, this should be the only one that you own. It's the best. I tell everyone about it. There were subsequent Circle albums, and if they hear the first one, they can move on to the others. But start with that first collection, and it was just remarkable.
Like Pink Floyd, I think it could be renamed The Dark Side of the Banjo.
Or that okay, do that. I never thought of that. Was that one of your 50 titles for your book that you were kicking around?
Yes, it was. I didn't think it would penetrate with enough people.
No, probably not.
But anyway, that was good.
I'm working on a
talking album, which is a bunch of different poetry that I've set music to, because film scoring has been one of my pursuits. And I've took these stories and read them and put music behind them. I'll send you one if you want to play it.
Absolutely.
You could, but, I'll just send it to you. I'll send you one. It's not good to send out unreleased music if somebody can take it, you know, and
right.
make their version if it's really good. And I think some of this is really good. But I'll send one that
I'll be discreet. I'll use all my discretion as an attorney and attorney client privilege, and then just let me hear it.
I'll send you one called The Newsman.
Okay.
It's about why I like this business and why it's easy to get up at 5 in the morning to catch a 7 o'clock plane and fly on 3 planes and drive to the gig. And not mine.
That's the key. John, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to John McEwen as we close out this year, 2020. It's not, and this discussion is not to be a retrospective of 2020. It just happens to be that we're closing it out. And, John, you with your career in music, you've seen every up and down of being on the road and being a recorded musician. And of course, nobody living today has seen anything like what happened in 2020 and the impact on performers, performance venues, recording, the ability to market records and recordings. With all of your experience, I guess you just sit it out. I mean, you're very productive and you're working on all these other projects, probably some others I haven't talked about, but with the experience that you have and everything that you've seen, what were your adjustments made? Because you're a performer. You're a performer. You're a talker. How do you have to miss that interaction with audiences?
I feel like if somebody said, let's put it back on square one and see what happens. See who survives.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, it was okay back then. Square one was 1948. There were no clubs to play. 1958, 1962. There were no rooms to play all over America. There was no airplay for certain types of music. There was no place to go, except maybe somewhere in your area you'd become known. And
interesting.
You know, it was like before the folk clubs came along, there were little congregations of folk music people in the 50s, for instance. And maybe there was a concert. But I remember when we did our first concert in 1967, not our first concert, but it was pretty dang early. It was only 8 months into being a group. But it was on a football field in the Valley. And the lineup was the Birds, the Jefferson Airplane, the Association, the Doors,
wow.
and... what was the other group? And some other group that is notable, I can't remember. But it cost $6 to get in. And it sold out the high school football field. And everybody played. And it started at 6 and finished at 12. And somebody said, you know, you can make a lot of money doing this kind of music. And it was the beginning to me of the awareness that music could be capitalized on and not just make chump change, you know. I mean, we were all playing, all those groups, the Doors were playing high schools like the Dirt Band did. in the afternoon. You do a high school assembly. Mm-hmm. You go play at college at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But then they kind of, by 68 and 9, they started moving into nighttime. And by 1970, a few more venues were showing up, and a few more concerts were being tried. And by 1974, three, when Three Dog Night played the Tampa Stadium and did something like 80,000 people, everybody went, wow, you can do big things with this music. You know?
And not for $6 a ticket either.
Right. Yeah, that was probably $9 a ticket.
Well.
That was the biggest gross to date at the time. And then things just kind of exploded, and promoters came in, and that means they... The geek that was trying to learn to play guitar that realized you knew how to sell tickets and keep track of seats started buying acts and sticking them up on stages, and he became the powerful geek. The geek word was dropped, and he became the promoter.
The promoter.
You know, and it just turns into a long conversation. What else do you want to know?
No, that's a good, you know, I got onto that, and you filled it in great words. Like, looking back on your experience, what 2020 in perspective, and I think you've made a point. Listen, this whole year since this started, every guest on the program, I've touched a little bit on the impact of the virus and the pandemic on business. You're the first person to say that it might be a reset. It's almost like a readout. I mean, we don't want to minimize the death and the pain and all that, but we're talking just about the music industry and performers, which was my question was limited to that, but it might that's something I've never heard. It might be a reset on the music business and how it proceeds. I'd never thought about that.
Well, you know, it's going to be different. Things are going to take a while to get back to. It's not going to be like, oh, it's August and it's time to go back into the everything. You know, we're going to have a concert with 25,000 people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Who's going to insure it?
That's the thing. Who's going to license it? What state authority is going to say, yes, you have a license to have all these people in one spot and take the heat for that? And then who's going to insure it? You're right. You're right. Boy, that's exactly it.
And who's going to watch out and if it cancels? See, if a concert cancels, the promoter pays the ticket fee. You know, I mean, it costs them so much money. And it's so hard to book a tour. If you're booking the Eagles, you can't book one date. You got to book 4 dates let's go down in scale. You book some groups, you have to have 4 or 5 dates for them to be able to break even. You can't go out and do one date somewhere.
No.
It's going to cost a fortune because airfares, hotels, bus, everything costs. Let's say you're going to play somewhere in North Dakota and you're based in Nashville, one guy's in L.A., it's going to cost you thousands of dollars to get everybody there the day before the concert. And you're going to have the day before hotels, the day of hotels. You're going to have 2 bus drivers because just for part of the trip, because you can't drive over 8 or 10 hours anymore. The driver steps on the bus, he turns on his iPad, and he must sign in to the DOT, of wherever, Department of Transportation, wherever he is, and they log his time. And if he drives over 10 hours, he gets fined. If he drives over 12 hours, he gets, it's a problem.
Yeah. Boy, I never thought about that either.
Their driver. And, you know, it cost the Dirt Band. Now, I road managed the group for the first 11 years, and I kept track of expenses after that. And it cost the band an average of $4,500 a day to be on the road. You know, just to be out there.
Wow.
We're going to go out and do 4 dates. It's going to take us 7 days. Well, it's going to be 7 times $4,500 to be out there. So you're looking at $30,000 just to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah, just so you can turn any kind of profit.
You better make $40,000. No, you better make
more than that.
Better make $100,000.
Yeah.
And that means you're going to have to charge $25,000 a job. and it seems, wow, those guys are getting rich. Well, no, you've got road crew, and anyway, it just adds up to, you've got corporate expenses, you have to have startup fee. It's,
you have to have, John, you have to have lawyers, right?
I'm one guy that has three guys that play with me, and we don't use a bus, and we show up, and...
That was a softball to you, John. I'm a lawyer, so I was going to say, you got to have lawyers. You're supposed to be enthusiastic about it.
What was that? I missed it. I'm sorry.
I said you're going to have lawyers. And that was a softball to you because I'm a lawyer, and that way you could say absolutely, and they're worth every dime. You don't have to say that, but I just thought it would toss it out there. Silence.
Admitting that you're a lawyer is about like admitting you're a banjo player. The banjo player has gotten more popular.
That's true. They're welcome in more places than lawyers are. That's why I do both. And I found this, John, over the years, not that anybody cares. The jokes are the same. You just substitute banjo player for lawyer. They're
right.
Almost identical.
Oh, yeah.
Almost identical. This is, we're just messing around, John, but I always appreciate your wisdom, and I'm telling you now, you've got me set on this whole other concept of the music business as we come out of this pandemic tunnel. Who knows when it's going to be? I like to think that it'll be, you know, it's not going to be January. I don't think it's going to be February. I like to think it's going to be sometime in the summer, and see how the reset goes. I hope that artists are able to, performing artists,
well,
are able to hold on.
It can't be February. It can't be March.
No, it can't be.
Because you're going to have to, those dates have to be booked now.
That's right.
Before it can start, so the poster can be made by mid-January.
Right.
For the March 1 show, and it's just difficult. It's going to be summer and fall for major shows. There'll be smaller places that can do some shows with social distancing and wearing a mask and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got to get over the shock of having a new president.
Right.
And, I mean, by that, it's a shock to the whole system because one guy doesn't want to leave and one guy can't get in.
It's not supposed to happen that way.
It's not quite supposed to happen that way. But it's a maybe people should listen to the bluegrass tune, McKinley.
Yeah.
Our Jimmy Martin's guitar picking president. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, while we're talking about this, in many projects, we can come back to any of the projects you have in the works, and I don't mean to not come back. I know you're doing a lot of things, but so then let's talk for a minute. It's kind of related to this pandemic event. Before it began, before the pandemic and the closures and everything started, selling music was already difficult. Because first of all, the stores drop out, then you have online things. And then without performing, you don't even sell things at the site of a venue. I'm wondering how music is going to be conveyed, recorded music, how it's going to be get back into the minds of the fans.
That's an important point. Yeah. Does it ever get back into the minds of the fans?
Yeah.
Does it become important? How does it become important enough for some guy to say, I don't need that six-pack of beer. I want to get that album.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to go see him next week. I want to, or for the girl to say, oh, he sings those songs so lovely and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know myself.
I don't know. It was.
But back in the day when the dirt band was starting, is where it may go there. Who knows? It goes. You know, you had one radio station playing everybody. You know, the top 40 stations were different then. That was Aretha Franklin. Following that, we had the Beatles, and coming up is Counting Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers.
Right.
And pretty soon that Doolin Banjos will be up here. But first, here's Marvin Gaye. You know? Do you remember radio like
that? Absolutely. Absolutely I do. Absolutely
now,
I do.
If you got enough airplay, you could work. If you could work, you could stay together. You can stay together long enough to get divorced or break up.
Or both.
Oh, yeah, right. There is that.
Well, I remember you told me the story about one of the really first big hit, I will say, that I guess maybe allowed the Dirt Band to continue together. And I know you've told me the story about how you had to get it on the air. That was the key then, was how do you get airplay?
I don't know which song you're talking about, because it's always the same story.
Well, okay. Well, that's the story. I remember the story about and it actually involved your brother Bill. And I don't know if it was a record producer or a radio station or your agent. I don't know who it was. It wasn't your agent, because Bill was.
Was it Long Hard Road?
I don't remember, but here's the story yes, you had a record that was doing pretty well. And in order to get it into a certain market, I don't know if it was the Northeast market or California, there was the request, and this may be in your book too, of money, of cash, or another item of equal value.
Oh, that was voila, an American Dream. American Dream.
Okay.
The guy that was the main promoter at the record company said, $5,000 on my desk right now or today sometime, or $5,000 worth of coke.
Cocaine, yeah.
And it's like, well, this is 1979. The coke wasn't delivered. The money was. The record went to the top 10.
Yep.
It would not have made it if we hadn't made him interested.
That's right. You got to pique their interest.
And he worked for the company.
That's what I remember that was so strange about it, is that he wanted a little extra taste, even though he was your guy.
He always got an extra taste on stuff. Yeah. I always hated that. Hey, I need a taste. Yeah, why don't you taste this?
John, you have there's no possible scenario.
He's happily dead right now.
Okay. Okay. There's no possible scenario that you haven't either seen or in towards the future you can offer a good opinion as to the outcome, at least a reasonable, educated opinion on what's going to happen. And I'm glad you have these new projects. I can't wait to see all of them. I can't wait to hear all of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then I can't wait to then bring you back on to Unreal Bluegrass. I know people love to have you on, and we always have interesting discussions. I'm not finished with you yet. I'm just saying, thank goodness you're out there finding things to do and exploring books. Now you're going to do a talking book. Now you're going to do poetry. Now you're going to do – I think it's great.
I don't think of it as poetry as much as spoken word.
Spoken word.
Poetry. Poetic things. One is a letter from a guy in the Civil War. I mean, a story about a guy in the Civil War written by somebody that was with him about what happened when he died. Another one is a story from a Vietnam soldier,
okay, which
is a poem, but it's about Nui Ba Dinh, which was a big battle that these guys had to wage. So these two different war stories have completely different music behind them. And another one is, you got trouble, my friends, right here. I say right here in Music City with a capital M, and that rhymes with N, and that stands for Nashville. Would you like to know what kind of talk goes on while they're loafing around that studio? They'll be trying out fuzz tone and delay and reverbs, bragging all about how they're going to cover up a banjo lick with a power chord. Friends, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 strings on a banjo. Strings that mark the difference between music and noise with a capital N, like where the trouble begins, right there in Nashville. And that's why
I want it. Please just take my money and send me that. I want all those things.
I've only done that once in front of people, and it absolutely floored them.
That's
and I
great.
Can't wait to get it. I got to put the music behind it, but I've got music behind a lot of these other things, and they're ready to go. But when the time's right, we'll get it. So that's a spoken word album. I'm not going to make it as a singer. I know that. I'm not. Oh, John McEwen sings, you know. But
maybe you could be the next Rod McEwen. Remember him?
Oh yeah, we were born in the same hospital. My mother loved him. I'm not going to make it as a singer. I'm not going to get a Grammy as a singer, I don't think. But I think I have a chance with a spoken word album. I want to get a Grammy.
I think it'll be great. I think I am. I'm very excited. You've perked me up, John, at the end of this rather dismal year for a lot of things. You've perked me up, and I hope the listeners will too, that someone with your history and everything you've done, you throughout it all, you have plans, and you're working on new creative. It's merely your art. Your art comes out in different forms. It could be in a musical endeavor, but now you're doing other things to find another channel for that. And maybe that's what has to happen too.
One of my influences is the other Steve Martin, mm-hmm. not you, Steve, but the other Steve Martin, a friend since high school, and I produced his album, The Crow.
Right.
And anyway.
Well, that won a Grammy, didn't it?
Yeah. We won a Grammy.
Yeah.
He didn't think, I'm not going to tour anymore. Steve, when this album comes out, you're going to have to tour. And listen, there's a difference when you tour with music. People want to hear the music. You don't have to think. Or you can spend the time playing the song thinking about what you're going to say between the next two songs. You only need 20 minutes of comedy to do an hour and 15-minute show.
That's true. That's true.
But he went out there, and he knocked it out of the park, and it got him. It was really neat.
He was still doing it.
Dinner with him once, and I can't tour. I can't go out there and be funny. I said, well, look, you are funny, so don't be whatever. Anyway, he found it.
He found it. Don't you think, since you brought it up, and I think this about his music, I think his song, his melody writing, I think is, he's really hit a groove, I think, with some of the melodies that he's written on the open back. And I've told him this before, too, that I think that's where his real, but to me, he really writes pretty melodies, and they're not horribly, horribly complicated. They're just really beautiful compositions, and it usually comes out when he's frailing or using his open back banjo. I just think his tune writing skills have gone through the roof.
Well, I think that if you look at that and try to analyze it, it's the lack of dexterity, of improvising, of noodling around that makes him play beautiful melodies.
Well, you...
Because I think he plays really pretty melodies, too.
Yeah.
They aren't hard.
No.
But they're hard to come up with.
That's right. And you're right. He's dead on the melody. And, of course, what did Earl always say? Play the words, which he meant by that. Play the lyric, play the melody of the song. So maybe that's where it comes around full circle. And there we're back to the circle of being broken again. See, John, how it all works out. Listen. What? I do enjoy you so much. I'm so glad you're doing well, and we'll see and hear more of you in the coming year. I can't wait for all these other projects you've got in the works.
I'm moving to Franklin, Tennessee.
That's a whole nother project.
Another thing I'm going to do is record with John McEwen. I'll record on any two songs you send me for a fee, but, we'll talk about that later. But same thing for everybody. And just because... In today's world, I've got my Pro Tools set up. Somebody can send me a track. I'll put mandolin or banjo, or if they're crazy, I'll put fiddle on it. I'm not a fiddle player, but I play the fiddle. But I don't consider... I've recorded the best fiddle players. Stuart Duncan, Mark O'Connor, Bobby Hicks. The list is long.
Yeah.
And I know what I can't do.
So then I know you have pretty much of a studio where you are now. So you're going to actually, when you move near Nashville, you're going to actually have a studio set up to do that kind of work, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to make it available.
It's going to be available for me and people that send me tracks. I've had people send me tracks over the last few years, and I'd put them in my Pro Tools, and I'd overdub to them and send them back on Dropbox or one of those other, usually Dropbox. If it's not too big of a file, I'll just email it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't even have to come to my house. It's something that I'm thinking of doing because I've had a couple people asking. And I thought, well, this is, if I make $750 sitting at home, that's like making $3,000 on the road.
That's right. Once you net it out, you're ahead of the game.
Oh, yeah. I'm not buying a plane ticket. I'm not renting a car. I'm not going out the day before and getting a hotel for two nights.
Yeah.
I don't have to fly somebody out to play with me. You know, and I'm not paying a commission. And it works out fine.
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. So you'll be right there in the middle of all that music that's happening that you've always had a hand in, but now you actually be sitting there in the middle and offer all these alternatives, and it'll probably put you more in the playing scene locally. You don't have to travel that far if you're going to be in Nashville. There's lots of venues.
Oh, I'm always going to be traveling, I think, until I can't anymore. But I just love going to, either Seattle or Minneapolis or any of the places. Even Twin Falls, Idaho is nice sometimes. I had the record crowd in Twin Falls. And 9,800 people came.
They'll never forget that night.
And it was really a hot night. It was Twin Falls.
One of those falls.
I can't remember if it was Twin Falls or Idaho Falls.
Yeah, I know.
They played them both the same week, and each one did really well. They're really nice halls. 9,800 in one and 11,000 in the other.
Nice.
But, 1,100.
Yeah, I was going to say, please be careful. I don't think the IRS ever monitors what I'm broadcasting, but
No,
1,100 is more comfortable for me to have you put out there. Although
those were great nights.
Well,
I look forward to that. I've got an orchestra piece that I'm waiting to. I'm hoping I can get an Oscar nomination if I can get this piece written that I've written on piano played. I'll send you that too.
Send me everything, and I won't play. I won't air anything until you say go.
No,
I'll just listen to it.
I'll send you things you can play.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll put them in.
Because I have them copyrighted, and just haven't. But these are things that this is one I would love somebody to do, and it's called Jewel's Theme. It's one I wrote for a movie that didn't get made, but I own the music, so
Okay.
I played everything but the oboe on it. And it's anyway.
Well, send me everything, John. I'll use everything you want me to use. I'm always intrigued by your thoughts and the music and the art that you create. So
thank you, man.
You're always welcome for that, and I always appreciate your time to be on Unreal Bluegrass. I feel like there's a lot of great discussion that we've had, mostly your contributions, almost all. But I think that's worth, and I appreciate you being on as the year closes out. It's not a year in. We're not trying to go back to best of 2020. That wouldn't take that long. Maybe, I don't know. But we're at the end of the year, and we're looking forward to a nice and healthy 2021, not only physically as individuals and as a nation, but also musically. Hopefully we can get all those things back in the same stroke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're going to play anything of mine that's bluegrass,
mm-hmm.
you're going to cut some songs into this interview, right?
Sure, I could.
Okay. Well,
tell me.
Yeah, play Ground Speed. That's one of my favorites. It's an Earl Scruggs song that I recorded on String Wizards 2.
Okay.
It's just really good. And Ground Speed, Earl was had an airline pilot's license, and he flew his own plane, and that's where he got the name for the song. So there's three I'll send you.
Okay.
Listen, cool.
John, have a great year next year, and we'll hook up again somewhere down the road. Hopefully, I'll see you. I haven't seen you live since I saw you with the 50th anniversary tour of the Dirt Man years ago. So that was a great show.
Yeah, that was a good night.
Yeah, all right.
The whole 50th year was a good night.
John,
it was fun.
Hey, listen, be safe traveling. And once you're set up and where you're going to be in Tennessee, drop me a line so I'll know where you are in case I'm down there that way.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, you take care of yourself, friend.
Like I said to my mom, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. I knew that was coming, and yet I walked right into it because you always say that. Even in the book, you say that. So, all right,
yeah.
John, take care of yourself, and we'll connect.
Wherever you are.
Thank you, sir. Thanks so much, John McEwen. Happy New Year to all of you. We'll catch up with John again in 2021, and just a lot more music yet to come. Thanks so much.